I'm Emma Warman, the Conservative candidate for Brighton Pavilion.
Hello, I'm Nick Yeomans, the Independent candidate.
So I'm Solomon Curtis, Labour's candidate.
My name's Caroline Lucas, and I'm the candidate for the Green Party.
They want you to hire them as your next MP. A 75k salary, 5 years job security. Unless there's a snap election, of course. But why should you hire them? I've decided to give these candidates a job interview, and I need some tips. So who better to ask than the person who interviewed me? She used to be BBC South East's political editor, but now she's head of communications at the Federation of Small Businesses, Louise Stewart.
Well, you're trying to find out if that person is suited for the job, and I remember from your job interview, you were clearly quite young, but you had done your research and you knew exactly what the job was about. And the other thing you look at in a job interview, and I suppose when you're looking to cast a vote, is somebody's track record. You want to listen out for, you know, a really solid answer, something that persuades you they really do want to be your MP, or they really do want that job, but not a sort of rehearsed off-pat, you know, I want this job because it's the next rung on my career ladder. You really want to hear from them the sort of enthusiasm and that they've done the research and they know a bit about your company or about your constituency.
So then, let's put them through their paces.
What is the prime quality for a parliamentarian?
I think the prime quality is the ability to listen.
Now give us an example of a time where you demonstrated those listening skills.
There was one actually where a patient was very, very unwell and didn't have any carers going in. What I did, I liaised with the doctor to get the medical evidence, family members, the nurses going in, and then basically collated together an action plan.
Well, you know, I think I've always listened to my mum as I was growing up, and I think that's probably, you know, done me quite well.
Well, I think we do it all the time on the doorsteps. But I think also people sometimes are quite angry when they speak to a politician, and you have to let them get that out of their system and understand how you can help them.
Why do you want this job?
I want this job because I want to be able to continue to stand up for the people in Brighton and to do that at Westminster.
And can you give us an example of a time where a constituent's concern, you brought that concern to the attention of the wider Parliament?
Yes, I mean, I think that there's been a whole set of concerns around the issue of international students at our colleges. So one of those issues, as I say, is bringing that issue to Parliament about international students.
If you get elected, you'll be on those famous benches. You may be shouted down. Tell us the time you've dealt with an awkward colleague.
Well, I think I'm just always quite polite to people. You know, I don't shout back necessarily. I don't think that helps matters. I normally respond with politeness, sometimes extra politeness, you know.
I have quite a simple strategy. You know, if someone says something negative, we just reply and say, thank you so much for commenting, and I look forward to seeing you in my surgeries on a Friday.
What would you say is your greatest weakness?
I should have anticipated that question, because it's one I always ask myself in when I'm doing interviewing. I think sometimes it's easy to not to see the wood for the trees. There is just so much work to be done, so many issues to focus on, and I think sometimes it can be hard to prioritise.
My weakness in a political context, I'm still very shy, you know, so doing this sort of thing, putting myself out there, doing the media, I don't go into it for the attention. That's just a necessary evil.
And just finally, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
Hopefully in Parliament, contesting the 2022 general election, still as an independent MP, uncorrupted by any party machinery.
Well, hopefully, I see myself on the green benches or quite possibly out campaigning again.
And I hope I'll be re-standing to be Brighton Pavilion's MP. And hopefully, you know, if people do support us this time around, which I hope they will, then they'll be judging me on my record.
Well, I don't want to take anything for granted, but I hope very much that I will have done another term serving the people of Brighton. It's a massive privilege and a real honour to do it.
Want to give them feedback? Well, polling opens tomorrow morning.
It's a dark, wintry morning here at Redhill Station in Surrey. Tired-looking commuters trudging past the ticket barriers. Among them, Fiona.
No, I am pretty hopeful that it will get here this morning.
But generally, this year so far, I mean, what's your experience of commuting been like?
Hell would be the one word I would describe.
But the disruption isn't just annoying. It could be having significant effects on these passengers' mental health.
I've developed some pretty severe anxiety issues relating to my commute.
When was it that you realised that you maybe needed to seek some help for this?
I'd made it the vast majority of the way home, and we were sitting on a red signal just north of Redhill station, and the driver on my train announced that we would no longer be stopping at Redhill and we would be going fast to Gatwick. And on that train journey down to Gatwick, I burst into tears, and that for me was the breaking point where I thought, no, this isn't okay with me anymore. I actually went to go and see my GP. She confirmed that those definitely were symptoms of anxiety that I was experiencing.
There isn't yet hard data available that would show whether GPs were seeing more patients with rail-related anxiety. But doctors in Sussex say they've seen patients whose mental health problems have been exacerbated by disruption on the rail network. Dr. Nick Gray is a consultant psychologist at the Sussex Partnership Mental Health Trust.
It's no surprise when we're seeing people who are reporting feeling somewhat helpless or kind of lower in mood. I think probably the biggest ways that disruptive commuting have on people's mental health is potentially lowering their mood and the impact it has on worry or anxiety.
In March, I got a phone call from a man named Malcolm Pelling. He was a renal patient from Goring and relied on the non-emergency patient transport service to get to his hospital appointments. That service was about to go to a private company, Co-Performer, but with 2 weeks to go, Malcolm didn't know crucial details about how the new provider would operate.
We don't quite know how it's going to work. We just think there's going to be people all over Sussex waiting for transport that probably won't arrive.
So, on the 1st of April, I was in Malcolm's front room to see if he was picked up on time.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. Well.
So what's just happened?
30 minutes on hold to be told they're not picking me up until 12:30.
They're not picking you up until 12:30?
No. They're picking me up at 12:30 and they've given me a number of another office in Thruxton, of all places, to ring to find out why.
12:30 being a particularly significant time for Malcolm because his appointment, 15 miles away in Brighton, was due to start at 12.
Hundreds of patients like Malcolm were hours late or even missed their appointments. We introduced another such patient, Lois Wood from Crawley, to Stephen Payne, Co-Performer's Sussex Business Manager.
And I am afraid that this is going to become much worse.
But I assure you that we're taking every step and that people, you know, the situation won't get worse, it will just get better and better.
Mr. Payne left his post shortly after recording that. There were long waits when patients and hospital staff rang up to book transport. I spoke to a whistleblower from inside one of Co-Performer's call centres.
We were constantly being barraged by hospitals, by patients going, where is my transport? I need to get to this important appointment, which we know that people need to get to. We understand that people need to dialyse 3 times a week. We know that radiotherapy patients need to go every day for their treatment, but there wasn't much we could do.
Towards the end of May, there was still little sign of improvement. We really wanted to speak to someone from one of Sussex's 7 CCGs, the groups of doctors who decide how to spend NHS money in their area and who hired Co-Performer in the first place. The CCGs refused to speak to us up to that point, so I accosted their finance officer at a council meeting.
Oh, you're not giving any interviews yourself?
Interviews in advance of the investigation, but I'm sure that's another month or so.
That's another month away, and obviously it's an issue of great concern for our listeners, and you've just talked about it in public in the meeting.
Well, that was a public meeting, so yes, but I think if you talk to our comms guy, then not doing any interviews prior to the publication of the independent investigation.
So, not prepared to talk to the media, but you are prepared to talk to councillors?
They represent the public.
Yes, just in Brighton and Hove. We speak to the public across Sussex.
Finally, a few days later, a lady called Wendy Carberry from the High-Wheeled Lewis and Haven CCG spoke to me, promising that Co-Performer had to improve by July or face losing the contract.
The CCGs are currently working very closely with Co-Performer and our local hospitals to address the continuing operational issues and to minimise any further disruption.
From then on, Co-Performer's performance data steadily improved. But just when we thought the worst was over, trouble at one of